get any access to Krishna whatsoever. So it's very important to understand her position as the personification of Krishna's enjoying spirit. Everybody has a propensity within to enjoy. That's why Krishna is all attractive. From whichever angle you look at, Krishna is attracting all the different living beings. So it's very important that if one wants to come to the stage of Radha Krishna Prem, then you have to be very strict about how you behave yourself, about what you speak, etc. We should know very thoroughly Srimati Radharani's position. So Radharani then, she's the fountainhead, if you like, of devotion. And so this is part of a seminar that I deliver sometimes when I'm traveling, called Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. So that's the title of the presentation. So we'll do just check a few things. This is an offering by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It was printed in an article in the Gaudiya, which was their regular magazine in the Gaudiya mat, and this was in 1934. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, all these days we have not spoken about Leela. We have not spoken about Leela. Why? Because this is our most confidential asset. This is our only sadhya or perfection. But one should not make a mistake of thinking that anatta nivritti, which means overcoming impediments such as lust and greed, is the prayojana or the goal in life. One thinking like this will never enter into arta pravritti, which means acquiring one's actual need. So there's anarta and there's arta. So one thinking like this will never enter into arta pravritti, or acquiring one's actual need. For this reason, I will begin speaking about Astakaya Leela. I know that you are not ready to hear it. This became a big issue after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left the planet, and a good group of his disciples basically abandoned most of the activities and even some of the philosophy that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had been presenting, and they ended up in Radhakund or this place or that place, but following a different path. And this is especially to do with this Astakaya Leela, or the different pastimes that Krishna performs at different times of the day. So this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he's saying we should not ignore that Astakaya Leela. But it's not that he's encouraging it. He says it very clearly that even though it's our most confidential asset, that relationship of Radha and Krishna, at the same time, we have to speak about that just so that you know it's there. Sukadeva Goswami, I think, also says that in presenting Krishna's pastimes, they're not meant for ordinary people, especially the pastimes between Radha and Krishna. Ordinary persons cannot understand. If you try to enter into it without proper understanding, you become a sahajya. Yeah, the principle of attraction, the principle of enjoyment, is embodied in Radha and Krishna. So if we try to interfere with that, or like some of the Babajis in Vrindavan, yeah, they're doing their 64 rounds, whatever. But they're naturally, they're not on that platform of truly understanding Radha and Krishna. It's a very exalted position. And therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, whenever he would go to Radhakund, he and his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they have a house there. You can still visit. It's open. And their concern is that one come to the highest stages, but not artificially. There's a lot of nice devotees in Radhakund. There's a lot of nonsense in Radhakund also. So one has to be a little wise, take instructions from the bona fide spiritual master. Then gradually you can enter into Radhakrishna Leela. So here he says, for this reason, just because it's there, not that he's preaching about this Asakalya Leela, but it has to be understood that such a thing exists. Sukadeva Goswami, same thing. These very confidential pastimes going on in Vrindavan, but he said, which should not be spoken in public. But at the same time, we have to know that it, at least it's there, so that as we get purified, we have some understanding of the end result, which is prayojana, the goal in life. So for this reason, I'll begin speaking about Astakalya Leela. I know you are not ready to hear it, but we should know that such a transcendental ideal exists within the realm of devotion. That is why anatta nivritti is essential. So anatta nivritti, you're just gradually giving up your faulty behavior and faulty thinking and becoming purified. So that's essential that we do that. But at the same time, it's essential on the other side, on the completely purified platform. He says here that we should know such a transcendental ideal exists within the realm of devotion. That is why anatta nivritti is essential. After the realm of anatta nivritti is artha nivritti, artha praviti, pure conjugal service to Radha and Krishna. So this is the transcendental reality. If we do not know of this transcendental realm, then all of our efforts may end in nivisheshavad, impersonalism. So it's essential to know about the connection between Radha and Krishna, because if you misunderstand it or you don't know about it, you end up becoming a Mayavadi, basically. Lack of information about the transcendental Leela, that platform, then leads a person to become a Sahaja, a Mayavadi, somewhere off target. So do not let your day pass in trying for anatta nivritti. Anatta pravritti is also necessary. Anatta nivritti is necessary until anatta pravritti has started. When anatta pravritti is present, then the anatta nivritti becomes unimportant. And the outer pravritti becomes prominent. So you can't, in other words, just jump ahead and say, now I'm living in Vrindavan, I don't need anything else, you know, I'm a liberated soul, etc. You have to give up the anatta nivrittis and take up the outer pravritti. That's the system. And as one becomes prominent, the other one, anatta nivritti, fades into the background. So we have to be very careful about not imitating pure devotees. There is a requirement in their behavior which leads to complete purification. But you can't pretend, you can't fake it. It has to be true, otherwise it leads to more and more problems. So in our line, as Prabhupada presented it to us, unfortunately, in the mid-1970s, when there were a lot of devotees working in the BBT in Los Angeles, then there was this kind of appearance of this anatta nivritti. And it was in our BBT department, because they were getting information from Chaitanya Charitamrita before anybody else in the society. So when they started reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then they started to, you know, commit offenses. One of the offenses was that they were having group meetings, men and the ladies in different places, and their only focus was to discuss the pastimes of Srimati Radharani. Everything else was, you know, external. Bhagavad Gita's external. This one's external. No, we should just read or contemplate the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis. That's perfection. At the same time, they were doing all kinds of nonsense. We heard that one girl that was part of the women's group, she had had an abortion earlier on as a devotee. And these people were going to present Astakaliya Leela. So Prabhupada was very upset by it. He one morning he was just sitting down to take his breakfast, and Pradyumna Prabhu, who was closely connected with a lot of the BBT devotees, but at the same time he was traveling with Prabhupada. So Pradyumna suddenly came into Prabhupada's room whilst he was about to start his breakfast, and I didn't hear what he said, but when Pradyumna started talking to Prabhupada, he had a piece of fruit in his hand, he put it back on the plate, he got up and walked out and went into his sitting room. He didn't take breakfast. He said, "Now you call all these people to see me and, you know, we'll get it sorted out." So they brought one or two of the devotees that were at the core of these activities. Prabhupada was so disturbed at one point he banged the desk. He told them, he was asking, "Why are you reading this kind of literature?" "Well, because it's in your books, Prabhupada. It's not that we're going outside anywhere else, but we're taking all our information that the worship of the gopis is the highest platform." So Prabhupada gave the example. He said, just when you have a disease, you need some treatment. So you can't just walk into any pharmacy and just take any pill or powder or medicine that you feel like. You've got to actually have it prescribed by a doctor that knows what what it's for. So he told these people that, you know, you have to disband. It was a famous incident in those days. It's called the Gopi Bhava Club. That's what the other devotees were referring to them. Gopi Bhava Club. Only focus on Radha Krishna and the gopis and nothing else. So it was an increasing disturbance in the society. Prabhupada said, if this is preached, or rather if this gets widespread, then he said all the preaching will stop. He knew very well what the consequences will be, because he'd seen it in the Gaudiya Math after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disappearance. So it's very important to follow the proper process. And then gradually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says here that the anatta pravrittis will fade out, and the outer pravritti comes in and becomes prominent. So he goes on, "Those who have chanted Hari Nam for 15 or 20 years should know such things. The beginners need not hear these topics or they will misunderstand. These topics are for the certain audiences but not for everyone. Also it is said, Apana Bhajanakata Na Kaibe Jata Jata. One should not reveal one's bhajan to others. If we disregard this instruction of our previous acharyas, then there may be a permanent fall from the realm of devotional service." So that's a pretty strong statement. We won't get to it today, but disturbance around September of 1976 when Prabhupada came to Vrindavan. One of his chief men at that time, Nittai Das, he had been Prabhupada's editor. He was studying Sanskrit and Bengali. He was well respected by everybody. But unfortunately, he got spoiled, because when Prabhupada came to Vrindavan after the opening in 1975, then Nittai was on his party and he wanted to stay in Vrindavan and develop a curriculum for the new school that was there, and also the deities in our deities in Vrindavan, they were the first really big-sized deities that we had. And Vrindavan itself, of course, was the... Vrindavan itself is very attractive to not just to pure devotees, but any devotees. So Prabhupada knew that if his disciples associate with, you know, these pseudo devotees that mainly live in Radhakund, then they'll all be spoiled. And that actually happened. This Nittai Das, in the excuse of studying Sanskrit, he was going to see one Goswami that was teaching and speaking from the Bhagavatam in Radhakund. So gradually Nittai got affected by that and disassociated from ISKCON. I mean, it's a long story, I won't go into all of it, but the poisonous effect was coming. And of course, many of these Babajis in Vrindavan, while claiming to be followers of Radharani, they were doing all kinds of nonsense. As Prabhupada said, smoking bidis and keeping one dozen wives, and he's a Babaji. Oh, look, he's wearing a loincloth like Rupa Goswami. He's got his Kanti Mala like Rupa Goswami. But what are they doing? All nonsense. So Prabhupada had to deal with that. It wasn't just talk. There was actually this group in Los Angeles in the BBT. Some of them were going to Radhakund. They learn about the so-called Astakaliya Leela, and then they would, you know, transport that back to any ISKCON devotees that were gullible enough to believe them. Not just actually from ISKCON also. There was Lalit Prasad Thakur. He was the younger brother of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So in 1971-72, Prabhupada met with him again in 76 to try to get them to lease us some land on the property that they have at the birth site of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So some devotees were going. Prabhupada himself went to see Lalit Prasad several times, so everybody thought it was okay. But when Prabhupada was not there, some devotees continued to go and see Lalit Prasad, and gradually they became spoiled. They got introduced to this 64 rounds. If you don't chant 64 rounds every day, you can't go back to Godhead. That was one of the seeds that they planted there. So there was one sannyasi, his name was Subal. Swami is one of the first early devotees to come into ISKCON and to come to India. So in our library that we have in Calcutta, which the main part of which is actually, it was the Bag Bazar Gaudiya Math's library, then it was taken away. But in that library we found some letters, and two or three of them were from Lalit Prasad Thakur. This boy, Subal, he had been taking some instruction without telling Prabhupada about, you know, how to do your bhajan properly. And I found one letter, I think from 1974, when Subal wrote to Srila Lalit Prasad Thakur and told him that, I've been following your instructions and chanting my 64 rounds every day. He said, but now it's becoming difficult because my guru, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he has sent me to Fiji to help with the preaching and the management there. So when I went there, I couldn't do my bhajan anymore. I couldn't get 64 rounds done because of all the management that had to be done. So he was asking for advice from Lalit Prasad, how he could somehow or another, you know, remain doing what Prabhupada wanted when he really wanted to do what they were suggesting. It's this Astakaliya Leela. So He had gone, Prabhupada had sent him to Fiji, but he lasted maybe a month or a couple of months, and then he gave the whole thing up. Eventually, he gave up his connection with Srila Prabhupada, and he started some, guruship thing of his own. So that's what happens. You get spoiled if you listen to an unbona fide source. As I say, I'm not going to go into all the details of it, but the end result was that Prabhupada's disciples, to some degree, due to our neophyte status, so they were going and seeing different Babajis, getting instructions for this and that. Prabhupada had to come in and really, put his foot down. So he said none of his disciples should go to Bhaktivinoda's birthplace. Otherwise you'd be spoiled like Subal and so many others. So anyway, we just mentioned there that there's this anatta nivritti and praviti, outer praviti. So in one of Prabhupada's purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 2, verse 37, Prabhupada says that the word kriyasu, meaning by manual labor or by work, is important in this verse. One should engage in practical service to the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, all of our activities are concentrated upon distributing Krishna literature. That's a quote that you can use in your... this is very important. One may approach any person and induce him to read Krishna literature so that in the future he may also become a devotee. Such activities are recommended in this verse. Kriyasu yas tvach charanaravindayo. Such activities will always remind the devotees of the lotus feet of the Lord. By fully concentrating on distributing books for Krishna, one is fully absorbed in Krishna, and this is samadhi. So if you want to get, the speed track into samadhi, go out and sell Prabhupada's books, and then you'll do it very easily. Because by selling books, I don't know if anybody here nowadays sells regularly, except, of course, some of our Mayapur devotees, but selling books, that was the mainstay of all of our activities in the early days. Yeah, and that was practically, you're out on Sankirtan, you take a little prasadam, you go to bed. That's your whole life. So Prabhupada liked that. The more that you distribute his books, then the more likely people are to take up Krishna consciousness. So he's very keen for that. So Prabhupada sent a letter to Mother Nandalal in 1974. I think she was in Italy, but I'm not sure. So Rameshwara Prabhu, who was the head of the BBT, he sent out a letter to all of us in his monthly BBT newsletter. We were all made supremely happy by Prabhupada's words then. They are every bit as inspiring today. So that letter, Prabhupada received it when he was in Paris. He says, "It's good news that you are finding engagement in distributing my books all day in Hawaii. So there is no question of taking any other engagement. Just take it as Krishna's mercy that you have come to Hawaii and engaged there full time, as it is a very important place." The explanation, now this was a newsletter that went out to all the different temples. So Rameshwara, he was one of the BBT trustees, or he was the BBT manager at that time. So he would send out these bits of nectar, things that Prabhupada said or did, and they'd go and circulate all around the ISKCON movement. So there was a controversy at that time because the book distribution was just starting to take off. And ISKCON as a group, mainly, we were noted for singing and dancing in the street. And we go out, 5 or 6 hours every day. that chanting. That was our main activity on Sankirtan. And we had, of course, some Back to Godhead magazines and a few small books, but nothing much more than that. So those people that were going out every day chanting, they were now getting a little perturbed because Prabhupada started sending letters out like this one, that if you really want to please me, distribute my books. And I think at one point they inquired, what's more important, to distribute your books or to go on the Harinam chanting? And Prabhupada said, selling and distributing his books is the more important activity. So Rameshwara, he made a comparison that our devotees going out every day selling books for hours and hours at a time, this is actually in the highest levels of devotional service that will be the explanation given by Rameshwara that Sankirtan is Lord Chaitanya's Leela, which he compares to the gopis trying to engage others in Krishna's service, that is the correct understanding. So Rameshwara very clearly told all the devotees that what you're doing is actually fully transcendental service. It's not just selling books, but we're actually trying to engage the devotees in deeper and deeper immersion in Sankirtan Leela, and that's that was the distribution of Prabhupada's books. So around that mid-1970s, that was when book distribution really took off. So sometimes people objected, no, we just wanted, you know, go on Sankirtan and chant, but the book distribution obviously became our chief occupation. So Prabhupada was very keen on us to sell his books, obviously. So, okay, that's a little bit about book distribution. On September the 1st, 1976, Prabhupada arrived in New Delhi. We'd just been down in Hyderabad, Janmashtami and Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, the devotees had installed some new deities there, when Prabhupada left Hyderabad, he went up to Delhi, and from Delhi then he went to Vrindavan on September the 1st, so that was Radhashtami Day. So Prabhupada observed the half-day fast along with the rest of us. And one thing that he did when he left Hyderabad, we had had the deities, all the pujas were performed by some South Indian brahmanas, our devotees, Yasoda Nandan, Swami, Achyutananda. They had made friends with these, I suppose they were Gaudiya Vaishnavs. The leader of them was Sampat Kumar Bhattacharya. So they did all the pujas. Prabhupada was very happy with them. They were very enthusiastic about helping ISKCON devotees, etc. So Prabhupada liked that very much. And Sampat Kumar Bhattacharya, he gave a shalagram shila to Srila Prabhupada the day that they left to go back to their town. So that shalagram shila was sitting on Prabhupada's desk. Prabhupada said, actually, this can be taken and put on the altar in Bombay, because the Juhu Beach temple was just being constructed. But then after that, then he called in Pradyumna, and he told Pradyumna, actually, he said, you can worship the Shalagram. In those days, worship of Shalagram Shila was practically non-existent. There were only one or two places where we had them, because Prabhupada said, I want to wait until my disciples are a bit more qualified before I let them begin Shalagram Shila. In fact, there was an incident in Govardhan where one or two of the devotees, they'd heard about, you know, worship of Govardhan Hill, so they actually collected some Govardhan Shilas And when that was reported back to Srila Prabhupada, he got very upset. He ordered them, anybody who's taken a stone from Govardhan, go and put it back where it came from. He said, you're not qualified for this kind of worship at this point. So anyway, there was a whole scene there in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada kind of walked straight into it. Let me see. I'll bring this up again in a minute. So anyway, Prabhupada arrived in Delhi, and it was Radhastami day. Prabhupada also finished the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam on that particular day, and he wrote a note at the end of the eighth canto. He said, "This commentation has been finished in our New Delhi Center today, the 1st of September 1976, the day of Radhastami, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Acharyas. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, he says, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakti Sannivas, Janami Janami Hoi Ayabilas. So I am attempting to present the Srimad Bhagavatam in the English language by the order of my spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And by his grace, the work of translation is gradually progressing. And the European and American devotees who have joined the Krishna consciousness movement are helping me considerably. Thus we have expectations of finishing the great task before my passing away. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga." So at the end of that, of the walk on Radhastami there, Prabhupada stopped and then he told us, he said, actually, after he completes the ninth canto, because he's just beginning the ninth canto, when he finishes the ninth canto, he said he may skip the tenth canto and go directly to the 11th and 12th cantos, and then go back to the 10th, because he's already done the 10th canto and he's summary studied the book Krishna. So that was something that we also, somebody criticized, that we're not doing, this is some comments we heard after Prabhupada's disappearance, that Prabhupada was working on the 10th canto and then he stopped and left the planet, and that work that he was doing went up as far as about chapter 30 or something, Gopi Leela's, that subject matter. So some of our critics were saying, well, Prabhupada never translated the 10th canto because his disciples weren't qualified to hear it. So this was one criticism. But actually, Prabhupada translated the Krishna book many years before it came out in this format. He did a summary study. So if anybody ever brings you this point up, that Prabhupada never translated the 10th canto because his disciples weren't qualified to hear it, this is the answer. That Prabhupada, it was one of the first things that Prabhupada translated, and it was published as the Krishna book. So in the daytime, Prabhupada went down into the temple room to preside over an initiation ceremony in which he awarded first initiation to 10 men and second initiation to 9. All of them mainly boys from Lokanath Swami's bullock cart Sankirtan party. So although they were enthusiastic in Kirtan, it was apparent that they are raw recruits and they need a lot of training. So the yajna was held in the cramped temple room, and Prabhupada had to twice tell them when they came forward to get their beads and names not to touch the sacrificial paraphernalia with their feet or step over it. It was a tiny little place. They had the fire pit there, and it was a little difficult maneuvering, and twice a couple of these boys actually stepped on some of the paraphernalia. Prabhupada noticed it immediately, because Prabhupada never missed anything. He saw everything that was going on. So whilst when the program was started, when we first arrived, Pradyumna was with us, and we moved Prabhupada into his rooms. Pradyumna was staying with the servants, that was myself, and I think Jagadish was the secretary at that time. And they were in the middle of the fire jagya, and Prabhupada, I saw, he was looking this way and looking that way, and I was wondering what's going on. And Prabhupada then called me over, and the full kirtan was going on, so Prabhupada had to practically shout in my ear that he said, "Where is Pradyumna?" So I said, "I don't know, Srila Prabhupada." So he said, "Go and find him." So I looked around the temple. Pradyumna was upstairs. He'd gotten his new Shalagram Shila that Prabhupada had personally given to him the week before. And he was doing his puja. And so I went back down. I told Srila Prabhupada that Pradyumna's doing his puja, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada got really angry. This is right in the middle of the ceremony. He got really angry. He said, "Tell the nonsense. First guru puja, then other puja. Tell the nonsense." So I went and told Pradyumna. He immediately put everything down and came down into the temple room. So it was quite funny. Anyway, so we had some pandal that was done there on Radhasthami. And then by that time, of course, Pradyumna was attending because he was the one that used to do all the jagyas. He would, chant the mantras, put the flames, etc. So on Prabhupada's request, Pradyumna Prabhu gave a very good lecture on the 10 offenses to be avoided while chanting. Once or twice during Pradyumna's lecture, Prabhupada injected some small points of his own. At the conclusion, Prabhupada returned upstairs and left Pradyumna to conduct the fire sacrifice on his behalf. And afterwards we enjoyed a feast in honor of Srimati Radharani. So, one of Srimati Radharani's main services is to cook for Krishna. That goes on every day in Mother Jasoda's house, Radharani. After the cowherd boys have gone with Krishna to the forest, then the gopis would come and they would do various services under the guidance of Mother Jasoda. So Radharani, of course, is an expert cook. So on the after the opening of the Hyderabad temple, that was in August, then Prabhupada came up to spend some time in Delhi, and especially 3 months in Vrindavan. Then after that, we went down to Hyderabad again, because this family, the Bhadrukas, they had donated 560 acres of land to ISKCON. And they made up like a legal agreement that there would be some people from the brother's side, there'd be some people from the ISKCON side. They made a legal agreement so that there would always be at least one ISKCON person who was in the majority if they ever had any voting. So they were helping at that time. Later on, the relationship went sour. But anyway, we were there for about 2.5 weeks at the Hyderabad farm. And there was one incident there that we'll come to in a minute about cooking. I think on about December the 9th, Prabhupada told the devotees There was Mahamsa Swami, he was the chief in charge there. Hansa Dutta was there with a bus full of about 40 brahmacharis that he'd taken from, I won't say stealing, but he took them by bus from Germany to come and preach in India. And then the other third leader was Tejas Prabhu. So Tejas at that time had been temple president in Delhi for about 3 years. And he was doing all this preaching to the members of parliament. So at that time there was some, you know, rumors going around. It went in the newspapers. ISKCON is actually a front for the CIA. So to counter that, and it was actually, it came up in parliament that the Communist Party at that time was becoming a little strong. So they brought it up, they demanded to know who are these ISKCON people, they're coming here and they're, you know, poking around, they must be all secret agents of the CIA. So there was one paper, Blitz, you can imagine what kind of content that newspaper had with a name like that. But they were always printing articles against ISKCON, etc. So, what was I going to say? Anyway, we were in Hyderabad, and it came up to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disappearance day, and Prabhupada gave a very wonderful lecture to the local people. So Prabhupada's idea with the Hyderabad farm was that he was going to do his first serious attempt at Van Ashram. Anybody who's interested in that topic, you can read that. Some long conversations that Prabhupada had with Mahamsa and the others about how to establish this Van Ashram system. So one of the first programs that he did when he got settled in, he told the leaders, now at 7 o'clock every night, you invite the villagers to come and join in with us with chanting, and you give them some nice prasadam, and maybe you can speak for 5 minutes. That's all. They're simple villages. But he said, the Van Ashram system, it can be done in a very simple way. He said, we attract them first of all by chanting and giving them some prasadam. They come every night, gradually they become purified. Some of them will want to become devotees. So at that point then Prabhupada said they can be given an acre of land or half an acre of land. They can move from their village onto our land, and they can live in like small hamlets, so like 10 or 12 houses in one group, and then another group like that, small configurations, and let them worship any deity of Vishnu. Balaji, of course, is very popular down there. They can worship the deity in the early morning, they can do a little chanting, and then they go out in the fields and do their work. They're already expert, we don't have to teach them anything about, you know, plowing the land, planting crops, etc. They'll work as normal in the fields, and then in the evening they come back, take a bath, do some chanting, and that's it. So it's a very simple model. Yeah. Anybody who's interested in the Van Ashram system, you can read those conversations that we had with Prabhupada in mid-December 76. So anyway, the first night the program went very well. There was a lot of villagers that came. Hansa Dutta's men were there. Prabhupada in the morning and afternoon, he had seen these devotees just kind of hanging out. They weren't doing anything because nobody spoke English from both sides. Most of the Indian devotees couldn't speak English, and a lot of the German ones couldn't either. So they weren't doing anything. They were just kind of hanging around. Prabhupada came out of his room and he saw, "What's this? You're not engaged?" He said, "Go out and preach." So they got on their buses, they went around the local district, they were distributing a little prasadam and chanting, and then advertising that you can come to the ISKCON land and join in with the kirtan. So they did that. The first night about 150 people came, so Prabhupada was encouraged. The next night, about halfway through the program, Prabhupada had decided to stay in his quarters, and about 7 o'clock or something, he rang the buzzer. So I went into his room, and Prabhupada said, "What are they serving for prasadam?" And nobody had mentioned anything to him. But Prabhupada, as I say, he had this knack of knowing what was going on, you know, without anybody having to tell him. So he called me in, and he said, "What are they serving for prasadam?" So I said, "I don't know, Srila Prabhupada." He said, "Find out." So I wandered around, and I saw all these villages with leaf plates, and they had this clumps of rice. That was it, just boiled rice, but hard and in chunks. It was impossible to eat. So all the villagers were throwing, you know, they get their rice and throwing it on the ground. And then I saw a dog come up, and the dog was sniffing around the so-called prasadam, and he walked off also. Even the dogs weren't eating it. So I came back and I told Prabhupada what was going on. Oh, there's one other thing. I decided to check the kitchen out. So that was behind some farm buildings. I went round the back, and there's this fellow there. He's got his mustache. He's got this big, you know, scraper that they use for making khichdi and boiling rice, you know, the huge steel pots. So he was, you know, cooking away, and one of the devotees told me that I saw this fellow scooping off all the good rice from the top and, you know, putting it to one side to take home for his family. And then the other prasadam that was inedible, then they were offering that to Gaurnitai. So I went back and I told everything to Srila Prabhupada what was going on. He was absolutely furious. I mean, really, really angry. He called for Tejas, he called for Mahamsa, who wasn't there, he was in the city, and Hansaduta, and Jagadish also. Basically, Prabhupada just slammed them for not, you know, taking the time and trouble to see what was going on right under their nose. And this cook, as it turned out, he was the sweeper. In India, you know what the sweeper is. They get the lowest kind of jobs. So this guy that was cooking, he was actually, I'd seen him sweeping everything and the toilets and everything in the early morning. And now Mahamsa's got him cooking, you know, for the devotees and the deities. So Prabhupada was, I mean, beside himself. He was so angry. But Mahamsa wasn't there. He was in the city. It was getting late, so Prabhupada, you know, he left a word that now when Mahamsa comes, I want to see him first thing in the morning. So he arrived about 11 o'clock at night. He went straight to bed. And in the early morning, Prabhupada called the leaders into his room. And he told them, he said, "I am, you know, too angry and disturbed by what you've been doing." He said, Radharani is described, what's the verse? What's that verse? Radharani's cooking and doing service for Krishna. Prabhupada quoted this verse that Srimati Radharani is personally cooking for Krishna. And he told Mahamsa, he said, "And you have engaged a sweeper." He said, that means that after 7 years, he'd been a devotee for about 7 years. Prabhupada told him, he said, that means after 7 years, then you still don't know what the standard is as a brahmana. So he was very, very angry. with Mahamsa. Well, let me see, I got this down here. All right, so Prabhupada told him, he said, for an ordinary man, a life void of family affairs is almost unthinkable. So Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to develop detachment from worldly affairs are very difficult to appreciate, except by those with a very broad understanding and a genuine desire to seek out the real meaning of life. So, Prabhupada explained that the process is very painless, because by simply directing the inherent tendency to form bonds back towards Krishna, Prabhupada said this is the bhakti process. Not that we have to become a separate attachment, it simply has to be cleansed. So that is described in the Narada Pancharatna. The consciousness is there, attachment is there, but it is being covered by so many designations. Just like we've got a feeling for raising children. So attachment, that is attachment. So what is Mother Yasoda doing? She is attached to Krishna, that is Vrindavan. The same thing in other places. Vrindavan life means all attachment to Krishna. Mother Yasoda is attached to Krishna. Nanda Maharaj is attached to Krishna. The cowherd boys are attached to Krishna. The cows and calves are attached to Krishna. Radharani is attached to Krishna. The trees are attached to Krishna. The flowers are attached to Krishna. The water is attached to Krishna. This is Vrindavan. Nice. So he said, Vrindavan means that the central attachment is Krishna. So if you can create that central attachment for Krishna, that is Vrindavan. That is Vrindavan. So then you can create Vrindavan anywhere, any family, any society, any country. Just make a point of attachment, Krishna, and that is Vrindavan. That is required, and that is the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay, we're running out of time here. There's one other quote I wanted to give you. All right, just one last story. So Prabhupada was giving a Srimad Bhagavatam class in Vrindavan, and he was describing pure devotion. Means that we do not attempt to take benefit from Krishna, but simply try to give benefit to Krishna. This is pure devotion. So to illustrate this point, Prabhupada told us, he said, perhaps you know that once upon a time, Rupa Goswami desired that if somehow or another I could get some nice foodstuffs, I would invite Srila Sanatan Goswami to come and cook such nice food. So he had a desire like that. So they were living in Vrindavan, here and there, under the shade of the trees. So they had no stock of foodstuffs, nothing. So one very beautiful girl, she came and offered them rice, dal, ghee, etc. And she told him, Baba, we've got some festival. So she offered him so many things, and he immediately invited Sanatan Goswami to come and enjoy this feast that he prepared. So he was lamenting that he had nothing to offer, but he had a desire to offer something to his brother. So then this young girl comes, and she's got all the ingredients, and she says, no, don't worry, we're having a festival, so I'm bringing some of it to you. So he was a little puzzled by that. So she offered so many things, and he immediately invited Sanatan Goswami. And Rupa Goswami also was a very good cook. So he prepared very nice preparations and offered them to Sanatan Goswami as prasadam. So Sanatan Goswami astonishingly inquired, "Where did you get all these nice things in the middle of the forest?" So he told his brother, he said that in the morning I was desiring to make this offering for you, and in just a few hours' time, sometime, one very beautiful girl came and she offered these ingredients. So after hearing the description of the beautiful girl, Sanatan Goswami could understand this was Radharani. So immediately he chastised Rupa Goswami and told him, "Oh, that was Radharani." So he immediately chastised Rupa Goswami that you have taken service from Radharani. This is not good. We are trying to give service to Radharani and you have taken service from Radharani. Okay. All right, so I'm going to finish there. It's not much time to talk, but does anybody have any questions or comments? No? Anybody? Yes, Mantaji. I can't hear a thing.
Hare Krishna. You said that devotional service is to be attached to Krishna, and Vrindavan we create when we are attached to Krishna. But in the beginning, you said that we shouldn't be reading stories about Krishna, Ashtaka Lila, and all the things. If we don't read these stories, how we can develop attachment to Krishna? Maybe,
well,
it's true. Yeah, sorry, bro. It's true. In the beginning years, they misused it and they started behaving differently. But after practicing so many years, maybe some of us are a little bit qualified to read those.
Well, first of all, a devotee never thinks that he's qualified. As far as he himself goes, or yourself goes, the chanting of Hare Krishna, it's not to bring you to the stage of perfection, it is perfection, but you've just got to realize it, that's all. So the devotees, it's not exactly that you make advancement by reading the books. Yeah, ultimately you're relying on Krishna. Prabhupada did tell us in Vrindavan one time that it is possible, you know, to go back to Godhead simply by chanting. But we need all the background information so that we can make our faith very strong. If you're just chanting but you have some anarta, yeah, some material desires in your heart, that will spoil your chanting. Yeah, it has to be done very purely. So when Krishna thinks or sees our devotion, and when he's pleased with that, then you can enter in. Krishna's in your heart. Yeah, he knows everything that we're thinking and doing. So when we get to the point where we're pure, so-called pure, that means that point is where Krishna accepts your offerings, accepts your worship, and you can enter into proper pastimes or eternal pastimes with him. So it's not like a mechanical thing that, oh well, I've read so many books, nothing happened. The heart has to become purified. So Krishna's in the heart. When he becomes pleased with our devotional service, he reveals his pleasure and engages in Sankirtan, if you like, just the same as Rupa and Sanatan Goswami's. So it's not like just a mechanical thing. I sit down, I read for an hour, or, you know, I've been chanting for 10 years and nothing happened. We have a tendency to, you know, see things in that way. But the real thing is striking up that loving affection between Krishna and the devotee. And then Krishna reveals everything in due course of time. So Prabhupada always cautioned us that You can't imitate. It comes naturally when Krishna decides to reveal himself. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Prabhu, I agree with you that chanting will help us to achieve love for Krishna. But Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis and all the Goswamis, they spent their lives to writing about Krishna and his pastimes. So why we shouldn't be reading those books?
Why what?
Why we shouldn't be reading those books? Like Parampara, Guru Parampara, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and all the Goswamis, they spent their lives writing books about Krishna. Even Prabhupada translated the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is talking about Krishna and his pastimes. So why we shouldn't be reading those books?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking. Can you give a summary of that, very short?
You are saying that we have, in order to achieve love for Krishna, we have to chant. We shouldn't be
reading
books.
Well, who said that you don't need the books? It is possible in a very rare, instance where somebody was, very advanced but has not studied, actually can come to the platform of Krishna Prem. But it's very rare that that happens. Everybody has to go through the process of sadhana, because that modifies your behavior to the point where Krishna is now ready to accept your service directly. But if you think that you don't need to chant, you don't need to read all these books, all you have to do is to just sit down and chant, you won't last very long, because you're not qualified. Yeah, one example is in 1975, there was one devotee from America, a black devotee from America, who went to Africa to help with the preaching there. And he only lasted a few months, and then he left the African yatra and he came to see Prabhupada in Vrindavan. And he was complaining that, so many people are harassing me to go out and do this and do that, but all I want to do is just chant Hare Krishna, and then there's no need to do anything else. So he was quite pushy, and Prabhupada could see that if I tell him to do something that he doesn't want to do, he may go away. So he said, all right, he said, you go to Mayapur and you chant Hare Krishna. I'll give you that permission. So he came here, I guess around October of 76 maybe, and 75. And then at the beginning of 76, January, Prabhupada arrived here in Mayapur. So after he got settled in, he asked, so where is our Sharma? Where is he? Where is he staying? So the devotees told Prabhupada that he's living at the Goshala. Now in those days, the Goshala was a little brick hut, and there was a banana grove or something next to it. So he had gone over there to avoid all the devotees, and they said that he was chanting 150 rounds a day, and he was only eating the remnants of the foodstuffs of the other devotees. So that was his entire engagement, 150 rounds a day. Not easy to do. But yet when Prabhupada arrived after a few days and he asked, so where is our Sharma? He's out in the, in the Goshala. So somebody, I don't know whether Prabhupada sent for him or somebody sent him over. So then Prabhupada asked him, what are you doing? And then he explained to him, he's chanting 150 rounds a day. And Prabhupada, he wasn't angry, but he told him, he said, you're not qualified to do this Nirjana Bhajan. Yeah. So I think the first time he met with Prabhupada in Mayapur, he told him what his program was. And then the second, that was it. Sharma came to see Prabhupada. It wasn't enough for him to stay out at the Goshala. He wanted to build a hut in a tree. So he wanted to build a tree house so that he could stay aloof from everybody. He said, otherwise people are coming and want to talk with me, and I don't want to talk with them, I just want to chant. So Prabhupada said, no, he said, this desire, you want to live like a monkey up in a tree? He said, this is not good. So he went back to his place at the Gaushala. A couple of weeks later, there were more devotees arriving, getting ready for the Mayapur festival. So again, Sharma came to see Prabhupada, and he said, now I'm getting too disturbed again, so I want to go to Radhakund. Yeah? So Prabhupada shook his head. He said, that means you were restless. He said, you're not fit for doing Nirjana Bhajan. You should just chant and do some service. Yeah. Otherwise, he said, your spiritual life will be spoiled. So he developed a kind of standoffish mentality with the other devotees. He didn't like mixing with them. He was keeping himself aloof. So anyway, Prabhupada advised him, you should go back to Africa, do some practical preaching, you know, and do some service like that. So after a couple of hours, he came back and told Prabhupada, all right, I'm going to go to Africa again, as you desire. So that was February, and then in September, Prabhupada received a letter from Sharma. And basically the same problem. He just wanted to chant, and all the other devotees were telling him you should do something practical for pleasing Prabhupada. So he wrote this long letter that I only want to do my bhajan in Vrindavan. I don't want to do anything else. He had so many reasons. So Prabhupada told him, he said, it's not possible for you to chant 3 lakhs of names a day as Haridas Thakur was doing. He said he was so fixed in his meditation and sadhana, there was a giant snake that was living in the cave with him and he hardly noticed it. But because some of the villagers would come and take advice from him sometimes, they were afraid to go in there because the snake was there. So from within, Lord Vishnu instructed the snake, you know, this is causing a problem, go and live somewhere else. So apparently on its own volition, the snake went off and then the villagers were able to come in. But the point is that you can't chant that many rounds if you're a neophyte, as we are. Yeah. What will happen is that you'll chant for some time and then you'll go away. I mentioned about Subal. He was doing the same thing from Lalit Prasad. If you don't chant 64 rounds, you can't go back to Godhead. So Prabhupada said very clearly that you can go back to Godhead in one lifetime if you please Krishna properly. So Prabhupada gave us sadhana, but he never said that you should sit and chant alone. And as Prabhupada said, make an advertisement that now I'm a big Vaishnav. Yeah. So the main point is to follow the instructions of senior devotees. Don't, you know, make some confabulation or twist the words around. You know, do your rounds, what you can do, 16 rounds at least, and do some active service. Then Krishna will be pleased. So it's really, you know, it's an internal transformation that brings a person up to the point a pure devotional service. But if you try and do it without following the proper activities, sadhana bhakti, it won't work. You can't jump ahead. Yeah, you have to let things develop naturally between you and Krishna. Is that all right? Okay. All right. It's late. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.